Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We are very happy right now to be bringing in Barrett Salee from CBSSports.com. Writes about college football for CBSSports.com. You can also catch him on SiriusXM College, as well as the SEC Smothered and Covered podcast on VSporto at VSporto. Barrett, thank you so much for giving us some time this morning.
My pleasure, guys. What's happening?
First and foremost, I ran into you over at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium Media Tour on Tuesday. Just kind of give us your quick thoughts on the building and how blown away you were by it, because I know I was.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And honestly, I was skeptical. I love the Georgia Dome. I thought it was a very good facility. But it was basically a mid-sized SUV, and now they've got a Mercedes AMG 65 out there. It's pretty ridiculous. I know it's a little bit of fudging the numbers a little bit, but 1,264 beer taps at Mercedes-Benz Stadium as opposed to 30 at the Georgia Dome is insane. Now, granted, Georgia Dome had a lot of kegs and a lot of cans that were temporary and stuff, but whether it be the food options, the creative food options, the unique food options, the sight lines, everything. The interesting thing to me was that when you're sitting in the seat, you don't really notice the halo board unless you want to notice the halo board, which is, I think, a huge upgrade from a place like Jerry World, where, like, if you're sitting in that stadium, that scoreboard, it engulfs everything. And even if you're on the field, you feel it. And it's not that way at Mercedes-Benz.
All right, we'll go ahead and jump into college football. And the first story I wanted to get to here was your story on Brian Kelly and Notre Dame. And obviously, this has been a marriage that is destined to fail. Kind of, is it just the fact that Kelly hasn't had the kind of success other than the one trip to the national title that Notre Dame wants, or is there kind of more behind it than that?
Well, he don't want to be a college coach. I mean, I think it's clear he does not want to be a college coach. He constantly blames his players. He even blames the center for the loss to NC State in the middle of Hurricane Matthew for not consistently executing shotgun snaps in the middle of a freaking hurricane. You can't really get away doing that in college. Plus, on top of that, the story yet, he did say that he lost his way last year because he was fundraising during the course of the season. But guess what a college coach's job is to do? Fundraise. Like, that's not changing. You know, sometimes you have to do it in less than ideal circumstances. So, to me, you look at his last 4 years, his winning percentage is worse than Lane Kiffin's last 4 years at USC. And Lane Kiffin had 30 scholarship restrictions to deal with. And so, really, Brian Kelly has been living off of a national championship game appearance, and that's it. And really, 2 years ago when they went to the Fiesta Bowl, that's great, but you look at what Lane did. Not to be comparative, but I think USC and Notre Dame are rather comparative programs. Lane kind of had the same thing. He had one pretty solid season the last, during his USC stint, and then a bunch of just sort of okay, and he got fired. Brian Kelly just consistently finds a way to keep his job, and I just don't know why that is, because clearly he's not cut out to be a college head coach. I think he wants to be an NFL head coach. I think he realizes that time has passed, and really that has affected the way he operates.
Now, Georgia has a game in week one they certainly can't overlook with Appalachian State, but we're going to overlook it right now and talk about that week two matchup when Georgia heads up to South Bend. I know you're high on Georgia this year. You think that they are going to win the SEC and make it to the playoff. At least that was your prediction a little while ago. So that would make me think that you think Georgia's probably going to go up to South Bend and win this game?
Yeah, I think they win that game. I think maybe – here's the thing with Notre Dame. Later in the year, they might be pretty good. Like, they have the ability, I think, to to be a pretty good football team. But Brandon Wimbush in his second game as a starter against Georgia's defense, you know, even if Malcolm Parrish isn't there, I'd definitely roll with Georgia. Now, you put that game in you know, early November, okay, maybe it's a different story because, you know, Wimbush would be established. You know, some other pieces of that puzzle defensively would be established, and maybe they are a little bit more competitive. But, you know, I think early in the year, Notre Dame is still going to be sort of figuring things out. I don't necessarily think Georgia's going to be that way. I think Georgia's mostly in refinement mode at this point, and they have a pretty good idea of what they want to do, what they want to be, and right now we're just sort of, you know, dotting the I's and crossing the T's.
Talking with Barrett Salee as we are just 15 days away from getting the season started. All right, you told us, as Sam was alluding to, you mentioned us a couple of weeks ago, or maybe it was 3 or 4 weeks ago, you had Georgia and Auburn in the SEC championship game. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. All right. With Georgia winning, which I guess would put Georgia in if the SEC champion would be in the playoff. Is that, I mean, safe to say, unless they had a couple of strange, I don't know, non-conference losses or something like that? So
yeah, right now I've got Georgia. The way I did it, you know, I do the helmet schedule where I just make sure everything's right. And Georgia was one loss winning the SEC. Auburn would have its second loss, you know, in the SEC championship game, but would have beaten Alabama, which would only have one loss. So Georgia would be in. And then I think landscape wise, I doubt this would happen, but you could develop a situation where, you know, you decide, okay, two loss Auburn or one loss Alabama, but Auburn's second loss being in a game that they earned by beating Alabama, which would be just a big giant mess.
But I can tell you, Alabama will win out on that somehow.
I don't think so. I don't know. I hear you, and I understand that makes sense. I don't know. I think in that situation, if Auburn won and had one loss, and the second loss was a game that was a bonus game, a reward game, I don't know. I'd be fascinated to find out how they treat that, to be honest with you.
It is. I totally agree. And at some point, whether it's Alabama and Auburn or another conference, we're gonna that's gonna happen. With these championship games. I mean, I think that's inevitable. And now, even with the Big 12 playing their championship game, you know it's going to be a rematch of something that happened during the regular season. So that could lend to some kind of funky stuff as well.
Right. So, yeah, what happens if Oklahoma State runs the table but then loses to Oklahoma in the championship game?
Exactly.
And has one loss. Like, what do you – I don't know. I have no idea how you approach that.
Yeah, yeah, I know. That's going to be a fun one for the committee to have to make you know, make sense of.
Talking with Barrett Salee. Barrett, I wanted to ask you about the Florida Gators, because they obviously had to suspend a bunch of players, 7 players going into that game against Michigan, and Michigan is pretty much rebuilding that entire team, so that's going to be an interesting game over there at the Jerry Dome in Dallas. But Jim McElwain alluded to the fact that Antonio Callaway, who is the most high-profile player that is being suspended for this game, is running out of chances. But this is like his 4th or 5th time, like running afoul of the law / running afoul of breaking the rule. So how many chances do you get?
If you're Antonio Callaway, you get quite a bit. I think the thing with Antonio Callaway is the marijuana citation. Look, I mean, he's not the first kid to smoke weed, and won't be the last. The Title IX thing, I think there are a lot of mitigating to that that I don't necessarily think earn Antonio Callaway the benefit of the doubt, but at least earn a little bit more discretion in how they treat that, rather than, you know, something as egregious as other cases that we've seen, like at Baylor. And then the credit card fraud thing, I you know, it's bad, but, you know, how is it, you know, dismissal worthy? I don't know. Aggregated on top of everything else, maybe. But I guess the silver lining is that he's not making the same mistakes twice. But he's certainly established himself as an incident guy, and I would be willing to, at this point, because he's an incident guy and because clearly he values himself over team, I would dismiss him. But and honestly, I don't necessarily think that's off the table right now, based on some conversations I've had with folks down in Gainesville. But, you know, it's I think they'd rather let the legal process run its course with this particular incident and then see what happens and then make a decision after that. And again, I wouldn't be surprised if that decision actually is dismissal. It just hasn't gotten to that point yet.
You know, in that big suspension, the seven players, though, really Callaway's the main one there. How do you think it affects the game that they have coming up against Michigan?
I don't really think it affects them at all. And I know I'm in the minority, but I'm a firm believer in Florida's wide receivers this year. Callaway was great the last couple of years, but he had to be great. He was the only good player they had. I think now with another year of Tyree Cleveland, with Hammond in there, with Freddie supposedly healthy, they still got Brandon Powell, which, you know, I've had a lot of coaches in Florida tell me that the offense actually runs around Brandon Powell anyway, and it always has. So I think that they can solve this pretty easily, and that really Antonio Callaway, while he's very talented, I think wide receiver-wise, he was just going to be a player out of a group of players who were successful this year. A lot of those guys still exist. So I believe that they can still beat Michigan, still will beat Michigan. And really, that Callaway's biggest impact would have been on special teams. And that's the biggest issue. They've got guys like a Dre Mathieu or whoever to step forward. So I don't necessarily think it's a killer for Florida against Michigan.
And I guess, I mean, this is not really a hot take or anything, but, I mean, all of that's going to depend, too, on, you know, can the quarterback get them the ball? Are they going to be able to be good at that position, at the quarterback position?
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll be okay. I think talking to some folks down there, they're really excited about Felipe Franks and really, if they feel like he's not ready to start, against Michigan and they need a bridge, that bridge actually might be Luke Del Rio. I don't necessarily think that Malik Zaire is going to be the starting quarterback. I think Felipe Franks and Del Rio actually may have a better shot at starting right now than Zaire. So we'll see. But, you know, I think ultimately when all is said and done, Felipe Franks will take the most snaps under center out of any of that group. But it just may not be right out of the gate.
Barrett, do you think any of these early season games, and it could be, you know, week one, week two, have a dramatic impact on the playoff picture? Because you look at Florida and Michigan, you look at Alabama and Florida State, and it's really, yeah, a loss in those games would set you back a little bit, but, I mean, if you ran the table after that from any of those teams' perspective, you're probably still going to make the playoffs. So is there one that kind of sticks out to you as having that impact early on?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Bama Florida State's a big deal at all in terms of the playoff. It certainly eliminates margin for error for the loser, but that's about it. I think Florida Michigan, it probably does affect the playoff because most of those teams are basically mirror images of each other. And if the loser of that game probably will not have solved a lot of its issues. And so I think you're going to leave that game scrambling if you're Michigan or Florida and you lose. And whereas I think Florida State and Alabama, the loser of that game is going to, you know, not be really be scrambling. There may be some concerns, but you're not going to be overly, freaking out about, what the problems are. I think if Florida and Michigan plays out the way I think it will, with Florida winning but Michigan not really looking very, very strong, I think there's going to be a lot of people in Ann Arbor looking around going, what exactly are we? And right now at that point, I don't think there's an answer.
And getting back to Georgia-Notre Dame for a second, Georgia fans might not want to hear this, but because Notre Dame isn't really in a conference, I know they have that de facto ACC schedule, but they're still an independent team. That game's much bigger for them than it is for Georgia, right?
Yeah, I mean, Georgia can lose and still, come back and have everything in front of it. Obviously that would depend a little bit on what kind of year that Notre Dame actually puts together. But, yeah, I mean, it's not the end of the world if they lose that game. And I think that's, as long as they're competitive, I think they'll win and win handily. But if they lose a close one, I wouldn't say it's something to be, overly, freaking out about.
Hey, before we let you go, I think the last time we had you on, the Hugh Freeze news had just broken. Now we've had a few more details that have come out over the last week or so. What do you think is the next step in that disaster?
I think there's a debate right now from his camp whether to go public and actually talk about what specifically happened, because it is sort of unrelated. It is unrelated stuff. But I also think there's a concern about credibility if he does come out and start talking. How does that make him look, and does that affect, perhaps how the NCAA enforcement staff views him when he goes and talks to them on September 11th? So I think that's, you know, that's sort of where it stands right now. You know, he may speak beforehand, before that, he may speak after it. But, you know, it's either going to be the case and everybody going up to, or I guess it's in Kentucky to talk to the NCAA, or Hugh Freeze coming clean, and we'll see which one comes first. But I do think it's sort of in Hugh Freeze's court right now, because he does, I think, at least want to, at least is considering talking, and we'll see if he actually does.
Barrett Salee from CBSSports.com, also SiriusXM College. Thanks for joining us, and hopefully we can check back in with you in a couple weeks as the college football season is definitely on the horizon. Thanks for giving us some time this morning, Barrett.
All right, thank you.
Barrett Salee, as I mentioned, CBSSports.com, SiriusXM College, at VSporto with the SEC Smothered and Covered podcast.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.